This episode of Energy Matters is sponsored by Arnold Golden and Gregory.
Welcome to Energy Matters, a show about how you can save money on your utility bills, use technology wisely, and live a more sustainable lifestyle. Here's your host, veteran energy regulator and clean energy expert, Commissioner Tim Echols.
Thank you, Scott Slade. It's always great to be saving money on that power bill, using technology wisely, and living a more sustainable life. Hey, it's Tim Echols. I'm high atop a little mountain here in Southern California with my friend Kitty Adams, the founder of Adopt a Charger. We're at the Getty Museum. Welcome to Energy Matters.
Well, thanks for having me, Tim, and welcome to the Getty Center. I'm proud to be showing it to all your friends from Georgia.
Well, let's talk about this center first, because I've never been here, and I've been to California quite a few times, but this is an expansive facility that you have to get to by tram. What's the origin of the Getty Center?
Well, the story of the Getty in Los Angeles actually started with the Getty Villa in Malibu on PCH. That museum was built, I believe, back in the 70s, and it was built by J. Paul Getty to house all his antiquities, all the, you know, Greek and Roman statues that he was buying in Europe at the time. The Getty Center, which was completed in the 90s, was actually built after J. Paul Getty had left the earth, and it is primarily to store everything else. So the Getty Center has a great collection of Louis XIV furniture. They've got an amazing collection of European paintings. They have a lot of really prominent exhibits that travel around the world. And I would say it is a world-class institution that welcomes millions of people a year from all over the world.
It's free, and there's a little charge to park, but you come up a tram, and you said the tram was pretty expensive to operate.
Yeah, they have two electric trams that bring people up from the main parking up to the top of the hill where the museum is located. Those trams run on electricity, so it's an efficient way to move people, kind of like a people mover, so to speak, and it's been super effective. One of the things that I love about the Getty is they bring sustainability front and center, so they are looking at not only at energy efficiency, how to move people in the least impactful manner, but they offer electric vehicle charging for the visitors and employees. They have an all-electric security fleet. They have electric shuttle buses that also help to bring people to the top of the hill. And they have a DC fast charger for the electric school buses that come on field trips to the Getty.
Well, you founded Adopt a Charger, but before we talk about this nonprofit you started, let's talk about how you got into driving electric vehicles, because you were driving them way back when Toyota was actually making EVs with the RAV4. Tell us about how you got into driving electric vehicles and what year that was.
Oh, I first found out about electric vehicles probably back in the 1990s. I saw an interview with Alexandra Paul, one of my heroes and now good friends. And at that time, she was on the show called Baywatch, and she drove a converted lead-acid battery VW Rabbit. So I saw, and I was like, whoa, an electric car. How crazy is that? And then the EV1 rolled out in Los Angeles, and I met somebody that drove an EV1 and thought, wow, I want an electric car. How do I get an electric car? So at the time, they were taking deposits for the Toyota RAV4 EV. I was lucky enough to be one of the people that got the 2002 Toyota RAV4 electric, and there's just no turning back. Once you drive electric, it's hard to go back to burning gas. So in that, at the time, some people that helped start Plug in America and a man named Chris Payne made a movie called Who Killed the Electric Car? Because back then, they were actually crushing electric cars, with the exception of the Toyota RAV4 EV. Toyota had allowed people to buy out their leases. I know they probably regretted it at the time, but because they did that, people were proving that electric transportation actually works. You know, 20 years later, there's still some of these Toyota RAV4 EVs on the road.
Well, the average person, they don't know the difference between CHAdeMO and CCS and Tesla and paddle charging. It was an unusual charging connection. Tell us about that on the RAV4.
Okay, well, it was different back in that day because now all the cars have an onboard charger. So you can actually charge any electric car at a 120-volt plug. But back in the day, the charger wasn't on board. So you had to have a special piece of equipment, you know, on the curb, and there was no standard for that. So there was the small paddle, the large paddle. The EV1 had yet another standard. So there wasn't any type of uniform approach. The California Air Resources Board was successful in passing some legislation requiring the automakers to put the charger on board. So all cars kind of charge at their own level. Some cars have actually two chargers on there that make them able to really do high-speed charging. But I think the most important thing to remember about charging is over 80% of it happens at home. Most people love the convenience of just plugging their car in at the garage, waking up in the morning to a full charge every day.
And you've evolved. Tell me the different electric cars that you've had through the years.
Oh, good one. I had the Toyota RAV4 EV, and then I moved out of my house. I was going through a divorce. I was in a rental, and there was no EVs available, but I couldn't make that car work anymore. So I had a neighborhood electric vehicle. So that was, the struggle was real with that car because it could only go 25 miles per hour, and it really was only tailored towards driving around the neighborhood. After that, I got the Chevy Volt EV in 2012 when that came out. I loved that car. It's a plug-in hybrid, so it had 50 miles electric, but it also had a gas generator, so you can go up to 300 total miles because you could kick into the gas mode. After my lease ran out on that, I got a Chevy Spark EV, which had about 86 miles range. It was a pure battery electric, and it was kind of a limited use case for me. I'm a one-car household, a single mom, so it was pretty challenging. So my next car was a BMW i3 with the range extender, and that car had about 80 miles range, but then it also had a small gas generator that could give you like an additional 20 miles. So that was, you know, to help get you to the next charger. That car was great, but it really wasn't the best for road trips because it didn't have the 300-mile total range that the Chevy Volt had. So my next car, I actually married my husband, and he had a Tesla Model X, and we realized at the time that we could get by with just one car, so then I got an electric bicycle. So now my husband and I split the Tesla Model X and a Pedego electric bike.
And out here with the great weather, that means you can probably ride that bike year-round, can't you?
I am stupidly happy when I'm on my bicycle. You know, I just feel like I'm more present with what's happening. Most of my trips are just really around my little, you know, my town. So to go to the grocery store, to go to the bank, the post office, it's really easy to do, actually, because not just because the weather's so great, but because there's, it's everything where I am is relatively close together. But when I'm like traveling across the LA basin, that's when you really need a car because it's pretty spread out.
And now there's over 1 million EVs here in California, which is why our whole group came out here, is because when you have that kind of volume, then you have to have the infrastructure to accommodate it, and that's required some ingenuity, right? There's just so many Teslas in particular out here.
70% of the cars on the road are Tesla right now. And, you know, I go back to what I call the charging pyramid, where at least 80% of the charging happens at home, and then another 10% happens at workplace. The last 10%, what I refer to as opportunity charging, includes the DC fast charge depots or the supercharger network, and it also includes what I work on, and that's level 2 destination charging. So when I started Adopt a Charger, I'm an EV advocate, and I realized that people need to see EV charging at places they like to go in order to have confidence to buy the cars. I would do drive-in rides, and I heard all the time, oh, I want to go to Yosemite. So I knew that, you know, even if it's just one time a year people take that road trip, they're not wanting to sacrifice. And so I knew I wanted to help put EV charging in places where there's not necessarily a business case for it. At these national parks and state parks, you know, they're very seasonal. Some are open 4 days a week. So if you're counting on that charging station to be used 9 or 10 times a day in order to recoup the cost of operation, it doesn't always work out. It doesn't always pencil out. So when I started Adopt a Charger, I decided to do it as a nonprofit, similar to Adopt a Highway, based on kind of like NPR, where I get the foundational funding, and then I rely on user support and sponsorship to help cover the costs of operation. Because another big challenge in working in these remote rural locations is connectivity. And if you don't have cell signal to authenticate a credit card and take payment, that is a deal killer. So I didn't want anything to stop us from, you know, providing access. And, you know, when it, at the end of the day, a level two charger is really a glorified electrical outlet. And a lot of people, if you look at the PlugShare app and you're looking at a area that's an emerging market, a lot of the pins on the map are RV parks or NEMA 1450 outlets.
I've got to bring you back one more segment because we haven't even got into this stuff, so we got to do one more segment. Okay. Hey, she's going to stick around. Kitty Adams, we're at the Getty Center here in LA, and we'll bring her back and talk about how Adopt a Charger has grown now across the country and hopefully soon in Georgia. This is Tim Echols. You're listening to Energy Matters. Hey, Tim Echols here for Gem Car Wraps, GEM Car Wraps, this fantastic group out of Brunswick that do wraps on vehicles, jet skis, golf carts. They've got it on my vehicles. So check it out, Gem Car Wraps on Facebook.
Gas South believes in the difference we can all make, like the difference in putting people first and showing that you care. For us, our difference is saving people money with our best rates and no deposit. And the difference we make in our community by taking care of our friends and neighbors and giving back 5% of our profits to help children in need. Learn more about what makes us different at GasSouth.com. Gas South. The difference is good.
Logan Booker, producer of Energy Matters, here for Better Tomorrow Solar. Imagine a world powered by sunlight. Imagine your home powered by sunlight. Better Tomorrow Solar has a passion for helping you see this for yourself. Better Tomorrow Solar can install your solar panels at no upfront cost. Build equity in your own home rather than paying the utility company. Find out more at BetterTomorrowSolar.com. That's BetterTomorrowSolar.com and see how you can make your world better.
This episode of Energy Matters is sponsored by Arnold, Golden, and Gregory, an AmLaw 200 law firm with 180 attorneys in Atlanta and Washington, D.C. They take a business sensibility approach when advising clients. They provide industry knowledge, attention to detail, transparency, and value to help businesses and individuals achieve their definition of success. AGG subscribes to the belief not if, but how. We thank John Gornall and all the attorneys and staff at AGG for sponsoring our show.
Hey, Tim Echols back here at the Getty Museum with Kitty Adams. Is it Getty Museum or Getty Center? Well, how do you refer to it?
I refer to this property as the Getty Center because there actually is two museums in Los Angeles, the Getty Villa, which is like an old Roman villa on that overlooks the Pacific Ocean, and then the Getty Center, which is here off the 405 that you see mostly when you're driving on the 405. You can't miss it.
You know, for those of you that don't come to California, they call their interstates the 5, the 405. They have their own little language out here. We just say 85, 75, 285, but you guys use the article and say the 405, right?
The 405 is pretty famous, mostly because it's a bumper-to-bumper to traffic most of the time.
And we heard about Carmageddon when we were at ABM at the LAX lot, that sometimes on the weekends as people try to get in there and get parking places, there can be, he told me, 10,000 cars in there trying to get parking places to fly.
Well, we are a huge metropolis that is kind of built around the freeway system. It's very spread out. And, you know, one of the big incentives to buy an electric vehicle is having access as a single occupant to the carpool lane. So a lot of people buy EVs just so they can be in the carpool lane and shorten their commute.
Well, let's talk some more about Adopt a Charger because, you know, folks, you know, I love EVs. You know, I've had 7 EVs, and, you know, I try to educate our audience just about, you know, the good and the bad, because there are, you know, for the pioneers like you, it's inconvenient. And I've been inconvenienced by driving an EV. So we've got to make the whole experience better. We've got to have high customer satisfaction. And that's part of the reason you created Adopt a Charger, right? So that people would have confidence.
That's exactly it. I wanted it to be a reliable charge. You know, if I'm expecting people to go out to Fort Ross State Historic Park on the Sonoma coast of California, there's just nothing else around. So we got to make sure that we're going to offer them a reliable charge to enable that zero emission travel. And also another very important part about Adopt-a-Charger is the outreach and education part of it. By putting these charging stations at high-profile, iconic destinations like the Getty, I enable interaction between the EV curious and people that actually own the cars. There's still a disconnect when it comes to selling electric vehicles at the dealer. So the best people for the new technology are actually the owners themselves.
Yeah, it's always good to get people's opinion. Hey, how do you like your Tesla? How do you like your Chevy Volt? How do you like your Nissan Leaf? I've yet to have a Tesla. One, I'm a politician, and I don't want people to feel like I'm a rich guy, because, one, I'm not a rich guy. But clearly, if I had to be out on the highway all the time, I'm not talking about local Atlanta. I'm talking about if I'm driving trips over 200 miles on a regular basis, I think I would have to have a Tesla, because you just get double the number of chargers. It's just, there's just so much more access and reliability.
You are absolutely right. And Tesla took a different approach. They were looking at where people wanted to go. It's a little bit different with Tesla because they're vertically integrated. So the supercharger network really exists to help them sell cars. Whereas the other, you know, EVgo, Electrify America, some of the other, like BP Pulse, they're third-party providers that have to make, you know, recoup their costs of that charging service, whereas Tesla, they just see it as a way to help sell the car.
So Adopt a Charger started here. Take me through kind of the first, let's just take the first half of the nonprofit's life. Take me through that growth.
Well, it's pretty interesting because it did start in California, which is a ZEV state. So in the beginning, most of the electric vehicles were being shipped to California, Washington, Oregon.
Wait a second. What is a ZEV state? People in Georgia, we've never heard of that.
A ZEV stands for zero emission vehicles. So the California Air Resources Board created a mandate that if you were going to sell vehicles in the state of California by a certain date, 10% of those cars had to be electric. So it was a way to help, you know, move the industry along. And because of that, we had a lot of cars that were just shipped here to comply with those regulations.
Is it true that companies like Jaguar and others were buying the credits created by Tesla because they don't have any emissions on any of their cars, and that these, some of these companies were buying Tesla credits so that they could keep selling their gas cars here?
Yeah, you know, I don't know the complete backstory on that, but Tesla was selling their credits to other automakers so that they could comply with those California regulations.
Okay, so you started this just out of your home, right? And it began as a very small nonprofit where you would approach someone like this museum and say, hey, I can help you get charger. How did you do that?
Well, actually, I did approach the Getty, but most of my locations have been people reaching out to me, we need your help. So I did start in California, but really early on, I started getting inquiries from Kentucky, Indiana, Ohio, Missouri, Michigan, places that were emerging markets where the other electric vehicle service providers did not see a business case or there wasn't any government funding to help offset the cost. So, you know, they're businesses. They're going to go where the cars are. So that's where Adopt-A-Charger really filled that void.
We call that in Georgia a charging desert. And as a commissioner regulating the utility, along with my colleagues, we have asked them to put chargers, two level two and one DC fast charger, throughout the charging deserts in our state, with ratepayer money. So because we didn't think there was a business case for anyone to go out there, and I thought. You know, these charger companies, they're never going to go here. We'll never get a charger. The only way to get it, because I didn't know about you, the only way to get it is to have the utility do it.
I'm a big proponent of utility involvement in charging infrastructure because unlike those third-party providers that have to rely on the markup per kilowatt that they're selling, the utilities are part of 100% of that charging pyramid. So they're the ones that are benefiting from that 80 to 90% of charging that happens at home. The utilities realize that they have to enable road trips and travel, but they don't have to rely solely on that one DC fast charger in a remote area of Georgia to create their business case.
And my theory back in the day, because I got my first Leaf in 2013, was that if people bought EVs, then they would be buying more electricity at home. And so the cost of building an $80,000 charging island would not really impact rates that much because we got additional load from what the people are doing 80% of the time at home. So I felt like that building chargers was actually good for the utility and good for ratepayers.
I could not agree with you more, and a lot of people have concerns about, you know, the electrification of transportation and what that means to the grid, but actually the electric vehicles have the ability to be of service to the grid. They can help, you know, like here in Los Angeles with LADWP, at one point they used to have overgeneration of wind energy at night. There's not a lot of places you can push that energy out because businesses are closed, but if you encourage people to plug in their cars and charge at that time, it can help you avoid a curtailing incident.
Well, let's keep going. How did you get going in other states with you basically officing here out of your home?
Mostly working with the EV driving community. So the Electric Vehicle Association has been, you know, a key partner, Plug in America. And once people started to hear about me, the word spread very quickly, and just enabling that one, like Stuart Unger from Evolve Kentucky, he just like picked up the ball and ran with it. So if I can give them some connections, a little bit of money, people are really making miracles happen in their own states.
For those of you that are EV drivers, we want you to tell us where you see broken chargers in Georgia, because Kitty's going to come to Georgia, and we've got a team that's going to ride her around, and we've got some electricians that have volunteered to do the electrical work, and we're going to get these chargers back where they need to be, because Kitty, chargers don't last forever, and a lot of these were put in 14 and 15 as a donation from Tesla and Nissan.
Oh, I am so happy to help, because actually broken charging stations give people the wrong impression. They think EVs aren't ready for prime time, and nothing could be further from the truth. So I am so happy to help out in Georgia, and I am so grateful for what you're doing, because really, you know, it's going to take advocates like you to help move the needle in states where there's not a lot of awareness of electric cars.
What electric car would you really like to own? If you could have any electric car right now, just wave the magic wand and money was not an object. And I'm not assuming you're going to buy the richest car, because you might surprise me. But what electric car would you get if you could get one, any car?
Well, I just fell in love with the Kia EV9. It's a 7-seater SUV that's coming out from Kia Motors, and it just checks all the boxes for me. It's got long range. It's a big enough vehicle. You know, most of the time I'm on my electric bicycle, but I love to go camping. I love to go to the mountains. My family lives in Michigan, where you really need an all-wheel drive SUV. So, yep, that's going to be my next car.
And when you come to Georgia, we're going to take you down to the Kia plant where that car is going to be made, and we're going to introduce you to all the Kia folks down there.
Well, I sure do appreciate it, Tim. Thank you for having me on your show, and I'm looking forward to the Georgia trip.
And tell folks how they can get in touch with you and find out more about Adopt a Charger.
Thank you. You can check out our website, adoptacharger.org. There's a lot of information, and there you can sign up for our mailing list, and I send out a newsletter every month, and you can also contact me directly if you want some help getting something started in your area.
Hey, Tim Eccles from the Getty Museum. Another guest coming up in just a few minutes. You're listening to Energy Matters.
Everyone has tough times in their life. By checking the Project Share box at the bottom of your utility bill, you can make life a little easier for your neighbors. Your $1, $2, or $5 checkoff is matched by the utility and then used by the Salvation Army to help folks having a tough time paying their energy bills. It's that easy. Join PSC Commissioner Tim Eccles and many others by donating via your power bills this year. See more by clicking ProjectShareInfo.com. And thank you.
Tim Eccles, host of Energy Matters, here with Jeff Pratt of Green Power EMC. Jeff, more and more EMCs are offering solar to their members, and you're seeing it grow like crazy across rural Georgia.
Tim, you're right. Co-ops in Georgia are doing a great job of deploying solar across the state. In fact, they're leaders in the country with respect to engaging customers and deploying large-scale solar to benefit all their members.
Hey, contact your EMC and ask them about their solar energy policy, or just Google Green Power EMC.
You've heard about Gem Cars on Energy Matters. Made by Polaris in Anaheim, California, these street-legal, small electric vehicles go where golf carts are not allowed. Equipped with seatbelts, headlights, optional doors, and a tag, Gem Cars and Trucks are perfect for shuttles, corporate, or college campus use. In fact, Georgia Tech has over 100 of them. The new generation Gems have many options when selecting the battery type, onboard chargers, and enclosures to suit the climate. Go to GemCarService.com to find out more. That's GEMCarService.com.
Mr. Eccles, this is Christine Turner. I wanted to tell you personally how much I appreciate you help getting our power back on in Locust Grove. We got it back on as soon as you sent the email to the president. It came back on about 10:30 Saturday night, but I didn't get home till 10:30. Staying with my friends, Diane and Johnny died. I think your friends with your mom and dad that gave you your phone number. I just wanted to tell you how much I appreciate that and the people on the street, because they are older, and when we lose power, we don't have, because we're on wells, we can't do anything. So again, thank you very much. If you see my number on your phone, if you'd like to respond. Hope you're having a good day. Thank you so much.
Marlin Gas Services, a subsidiary of Chesapeake Utilities Corporation, is your leader in mobile pipeline solutions for hold, peak, and backup services to meet utilities demand schedules, and their experts in CNG and RNG transportation and logistics solutions. No pipeline, no problem. Marlin Gas Services can provide uninterrupted natural gas service for short or long-term projects, no matter the location. Learn more about how we can support your mobile natural gas needs at marlingas.com/energymatters. That's marlingas.com/energymatters.
Hey, Tim Eccles back. Another segment here. High atop this little mountain in L.A., looking out over the Pacific Ocean, sitting here at the Getty Center cafeteria with Jake Hopkins of Flint Energies. How's it going?
I am doing well. This is a beautiful view. You can see near everything up here at the top of this mountain, and very interesting art museum as well. So this is a nice way to ramp down our trip.
You and I were talking about the electric tram that comes up here, all these buildings, security in every room, air conditioning in every room, humidifiers, and yet this is a free museum. Getty must have left an absolute fortune.
Yeah, I know. We were sitting here thinking about all the cost, and that's the engineering side of my brain. They must have plenty to operate on, because my lunch probably is not funding a lot of these operations. But beautiful place, and very impressive. Appreciate it being here.
Well, we're wrapping up our trip. We did see the chargers that Kitty Adams, who was in the first two segments of the show today, we saw the chargers that she put in through Adopted Charger. Let's start and just familiarize our audience with Flint Energies and the territory that you all have in Georgia.
Okay, yeah. Flint is an electric membership cooperative, one of 41 in Georgia. We are in the middle Georgia area. We serve the city of Warner Robins and Centerville, and then we go west over right outside of Columbus, Georgia. So got a pretty good area there in middle Georgia. We have about 95,000 meters. It's roughly 70,000 members. But you know, the city of Warner Robins and Centerville, a lot of growth happening over there. And that's where we're seeing, you know, a higher number of EVs. And we're doing our best to support our membership there. And that's why, which is really why I wanted to come on this trip.
These populations are really relative. You think about the town of Butler or Reynolds in your territory, and then maybe the big city of Macon, right? In the bigger city of Atlanta, out here in Los Angeles, this is a mammoth area.
Yeah, that is a good point. It is all relative. Obviously, they're solving different issues out here than we are, and that's why we wanted to come see them and see where we're going to be, you know, likely in 5 years. I know earlier on the bus, I set a timer just for 60 seconds and counted the number of just Teslas I saw. And it's crazy how many you can count just in a minute, you know, versus over in Georgia. You know, I'm impressed when I see one every 10 minutes.
How many did you see in a given minute?
I believe it was around 12. And I'm just counting Teslas. I was not counting anything else because they're just very recognizable. So just I don't know. It was just something I wanted to do because you just constantly see them over here.
Kitty said that Teslas were about 70% of the EV market in the previous segment out here. Elon Musk, he's a genius. He built out that charging network to give those car buyers a confidence that they were going to be able to get a charge. I mean, it was the right way to do it. It seems like all the rest of the manufacturers are doing it the opposite.
Yeah, I think everybody's playing checkers and Elon's playing chess. You know, he definitely has got a lot going on up in there in his head, and he has clearly got the market share. He's holding on to it. It seems like everybody else is just trying to scramble to catch up. You know, I do think it's healthy that there is competition, and I'm sure they'll get there. But man, does he have a great lead, and he's got a great product. And I mean, people wouldn't be buying him if it wasn't a great car.
So let's think about, you know, your territory there, running really from Warner Robins Air Force Base over to Columbus, Fort Moore / Benning is in your territory. You guys serve that Buc-ee's, and we've seen a lot of chargers out here. But I tell you, I'm still convinced that a Buc-ee's is absolutely the best possible place you could ever put a charger. You've got bathrooms, security. You can shop. You can shop in there for 30 minutes, easy, right? Cleanest restrooms on the planet, probably, and it's everything that you need to stop for a half hour or an hour.
Yeah, you're exactly right. They nailed that location. The bathrooms they advertise, Buc-ee's advertises, they're the cleanest bathrooms. You know, that's what people really look for when they got a family. I've seen people out there walking their pets. You know, you could do that. They're selling everything inside from barbecue to deer corn to souvenir gifts. I mean, like you said, not only are you going to charge your car, but you're going to go in there and spend more money than you probably wanted to or meant to. It's a place to stop, and you can make 30 minutes go by, and it's not necessarily a burden.
Is it true that your boss, Jeremy Nelms, and his wife go there for dates?
No comment.
Yeah, we'll have to tease him on that. Well, let's talk about what you've learned on this trip. I mean, going into that LADP garage, LADP is the city utility, and seeing 375 chargers in one location. I mean, there was just no substitute for actually being there. I mean, you could see photos, but it was, to me, just stunning.
It was impressive. To say you put in a couple somewhere, say, oh, I've done it, I put in a couple chargers, but then say you've done, you know, several hundred. When you scale up that way, there's whole different challenges to solve. Yeah, hearing them talk about it and seeing how they've done it really made me think, how would we handle that scenario over in middle Georgia? What happens when we do have somebody that comes to us and says, this is what I'd like to do? How are we going to support that? I have learned on this trip, planning is critical. You really have to think out in the future and think about what you may want or need in the future, and not just what do you need today.
One of the guys on our trip works for a company in Atlanta that does exclusive multifamily charging and for like high rises down in their basement or condos, apartments. And I was over there visiting at their garage the other day, and they had not told Georgia Power that they wanted to do a lot of chargers. And they kind of came to them after the fact, after transformers were set, after everything was kind of, you know, designed. And it's expensive to go back and do this after the fact. It really needs to be done in the planning piece, right?
It does. And I hate it that, you know, the utility is probably not the first person you think of or somebody's thinking about when they're planning some charging infrastructure, unfortunately. But, you know, I want folks to know we're not the bad guy. We want to help. And we want to figure it out together. You know, the earlier we know, it helps us plan too. These distribution transformers that a lot of people might just, you know, glance over and not think about, you know, those take a while to get now. And we really don't like telling folks, I'm sorry, you're going to have to wait, you know, 12 months. You know, they don't like to hear that. We don't like to tell folks that. So knowing your plans and knowing what you want to do really helps it all the way around.
It's Jay Hopkins. It's with Flint Energies down in Middle Georgia. We're out at the Getty atop a little hill here overlooking the Pacific Ocean in California. Our host, Kitty Adams, today, we had a tour of the parking deck, and I know probably my listeners are going, man, you are really a geek if you go to the Getty Museum and the first thing you do is put on an orange vest and tour the parking deck. But Kitty got those chargers put in here. The woman is amazing. But one thing she said was that they designed those fast chargers for buses because they knew kids would be coming in here. I tell you, Jake, I'm not seeing people design chargers in Georgia for anyone pulling a trailer or for buses. And that's something I think we're going to have to think about in the future if Bluebird keeps going the way they're doing right there in your backyard.
Gas stations, I mean, they're designed so that you pull in from the side, fuel from the side, and often you can have a trailer behind you. I think there needs to be better planning there for an electric charge from the side, so that you can have something that you're pulling. You don't have to drop it off and pick it back up. And let's make it more convenient. So I don't know why they're not out there yet. I don't know why people's not thinking that way yet, but I do hope they're coming.
Well, if you think about how long it took airports just to have places to plug your cell phone in, right? We went decades, people leaning up against a pole, going over there where the trash can was plugged in or near the concession stand. So, I don't know, it just seems like we're slow on this. Just another couple minutes here in this segment. I know you guys have some new fast chargers down there in Taylor County. What's ahead for Flint Energies when it comes to electric vehicles?
We're actually planning a pilot called Managed Charging, Managed Charging Pilot. The goal there is we have a time of use rate for EV owners and tries to encourage them to change your habits and charge your cars at night. We've had some folks tell us that doesn't work for them. They don't like the thought of that whole house time of use rate. So we're going to explore using the vehicle telematics, getting that data, reading it, and maybe knowing when they charge, and that way we can incentivize folks to not charge during peak hours and charge during the night or during off-peak hours. So we're going to plan on doing a pilot soon regarding that, and hopefully that is another option for our EV owners.
Just another 30 seconds here. Your boss drives an F-150 Lightning, and I've heard him say it only cost him $5 or $6 to fill it up on the time of use rate. He's quite proud of that.
He is. And, you know, as I talk about this managed charging pilot and this time of use rate, it really helps to have an insider, especially when, you know, your CEO, who you can put on these programs and these pilots and get direct feedback. And, you know, when it's personal to him and he can say, you know what, I don't really like this or that, that's how we go look for something else and look for these pain points for our members.
It's got to start at the top. So important to live this. Well, look, thanks for being on Energy Matters, and thanks for being a part of the trip.
I appreciate being on here again. Thank you.
Hey, Tim Echols, one more segment from the Getty Center. You're listening to Energy Matters.
As the Southeast's leading non-utility power provider, Cherry Street Energy energizes businesses like Porsche and Gulfstream in cities like Macon and Atlanta with predictably priced, emission-free electricity. We build, own, and operate solar power plants for our partners, allowing them to deliver on sustainability promises with no complexities, upfront costs, or ongoing maintenance. All they get is a power bill. Simple as sunshine. To learn more, contact us at info@cherrystreetenergy.com.
Tim Eccles of Energy Matters here for Solar Sun World. No doubt you've seen solar panels popping up all over the state. If you want the precision of German engineering when it comes to solar, Solar Sun World is for you. Gerd and all the folks at Solar Sun World understand the complexities of solar and how to make it work for you. From tax credits to inverters to accelerated depreciation, they'll advise you on the best path forward. And Solar Sun World now offers power purchase agreements. Find them at solarsunworld.com. Solarsunworld.com.
Hello, Commissioner. I feel like it's very important that I occasionally let you know that I really appreciate the job that you do and your commitment to solar energy and electric vehicles. It really makes me happy, the idea of our wonderful state having more and more solar. Just, it really excites me. I really love the job you're doing. Anyway, thank you. Have a great day.
Hey, Tim Eccles, one more segment from the Getty Center. My buddy Sam Collier, he's a shareholder advocate. And Sam, we're up here. It's November and it's beautiful. I've got a short sleeve shirt on, a Georgia Bulldog shirt, which no one out here seems to know anything about. But you're on this trip. You brought Norm on this trip. Has it been what you thought it was going to be?
Oh, I thought it was going to be great, and it's been better, even than I thought. It's just been amazing. And it's part of what I've realized is what's involved with scaling this up. I mean, scaling is everything. And, you know, there's a saying Wayne Gretzky has, reason he's the most famous hockey scorer in world history, is he says, I skate to where the puck is going, not where it has been. And if we look at where the puck is going on transportation, there's every sign in the world that every automaker, and you can't do this, you can't drive a car without an automaker. They're all saying they're going to electrics. Some of them going totally electric, like Kia. Others substantial. And then even before you get to policy, which is huge, but even before you get to policy, there's every business indication that we better be ready, because it takes capital and forethought and time. And we have to plan ahead for where the puck is going in terms of the number of chargers, and be ready for that now, as soon as possible.
We were at Kia yesterday. I'm probably going to the LA Auto Show tonight, which is open till 10 o'clock. It seems like Kia is skating to where the puck is going.
Yes, I think so. In fact, probably leading, a real leader on that, in that regard, you know. Yeah.
Did you have a chance to ride in the EV6 and the EV9? And what were your thoughts about the EV9 SUV and that EV6, which is more the, you know, the kind of the midsize sedan?
Well, I liked them both. I drove the 9 and I gunned it to see what kind of torque it had. And it picked up really quickly. Didn't paste anybody to the seat like a Tesla would, but it was a lot of torque, and it did not drive like a big car. And I rode in the 6, but I've test driven it before, so I'm aware of it. Yeah.
So, and to recap our trip, we went, you know, over to LAX, where they have 500 chargers in a single deck. That's certainly something we could take away in Atlanta. We've looked at some fleet operations, and we have a port. I think our port's the third largest in the country. We'll be soon the second largest. So there's a tremendous potential for the port operations and drayage, the drayage business. We have so many distribution centers. You know, we went to the city. We heard from the county. We heard from the investor-owned utility out here. And, of course, nonprofit leaders. I mean, we really tried to, you know, get a really full picture of what's happening in California.
Well, and it all started with the P word, policy. If there weren't policies in California to make this happen, it would not be scaling. We would not come here. It's all about starting with policy. And that's one of the first tasks in Georgia and all the other states to enact policies that encourage this.
I wonder if Elon Musk building cars here, I wonder how much influence, and I don't know when we're going to know this or how we could even know this, but I wonder if him being here and the fact that 70% of the cars, EVs out here, are the cars that he makes, I wonder if that's had just kind of a disproportionate impact on even government leaders, you know, and those making policy, you know, at the California Air Resource Board, the Public Service Commission, Elon Musk influence.
I think it only reinforced what the public here already knew they wanted. They didn't know how. He made the how. And a wise man recently said that he's playing chess while everyone else is playing checkers. And he has taken the entire charging infrastructure and thought out ahead what is needed. So his is an example. But even that example couldn't work without policy. He had to have the incentives, you know, the carbon exchange they have has created a lot of the money for what we saw the chargers in place. And, you know, we've got to somehow deal with what carbon costs us in terms of our future and how to fund decarbonization strategies, the upfront capital to get things ready for people to go plug in.
We heard about hydrogen, too, and it was not what I wanted to hear. It was problems that they're having, and I guess you expect that, you know, as you're trying to jumpstart anything. Do you feel like hydrogen has a place, or is it 20 years out?
My personal, and I'm not an expert on this, is that the Class 7 and Class 8 vehicles may be where hydrogen's role is. You can spend more capital to make them safe because you're spending so much capital on the vehicle. But I personally, I don't see hydrogen in personal vehicles. I don't see it as a viable future.
I mean, we've got compressed natural gas, and I wouldn't say that we have a robust fueling robust fueling network in Georgia, though I personally have been working on this for 11 years in building out the CNG network, and it's still really not where you can confidently drive those vehicles around. But to your point, it's trash trucks, it's roll-offs, it's, you know, UPS Class 8 trucks that are running the same route every day that's really utilizing CNG and LNG. Hydrogen, to me, feels a lot like that.
It does. The only question is, do we do yet another infrastructure? We've already got the gasoline distribution system. We've got natural gas distribution system, CNG storage of natural gas. But why do another one if we're not going to make it ubiquitous across the landscape like we need EVs to be ubiquitous?
Tell us about your evolution into plug-in vehicles, because I know you don't consider yourself a pioneer, early adopter, but you're moving into it.
Yeah, I there's some things I'm early adopter on, but vehicles has not been one of them. So I waited a long time, and we don't change cars. I'm not a gearhead like my family of four generations, personally. But I thought the first thing I need to do is to swear that I will have a plug. And so I got a Ford Escape plug-in hybrid. I get about 40 miles on a charge. And around town, that's plenty. I just plug into the house every night. And, you know, so that is my bridge. Not natural gas, not anything. My bridge to the future is a plug-in hybrid.
You know, I hear everybody talking about equity for EVs and making them available for all, but I am of the belief that a Prius or some kind of plug-in hybrid better serves an individual who, maybe it's a single mom, they only have one vehicle. They've got a lot of limitations in their life. They're struggling to make the money work. And if you add the complications of a full battery electric vehicle that they may have to fast charge out there and stand in a line to do, especially if it's not a Tesla, seems like that there's a better way for low-income people to enter into this than just going to the deep end of the pool.
Well, I think there's so few moving parts in an EV compared to gasoline engine that it makes a lot of sense for used EVs to continue to have a life and serve people with a whole lot less hassles than keeping a gasoline car running. Having said that, the two things are the charging infrastructure, which needs to be, you know, equitably distributed across the landscape. And the second is we need to have some way to help people with that capital cost when the battery goes. I have a Ford, a 2008 Ford Escape Hybrid, and the battery is dead as a doornail, 160,000 miles, so I got use out of it. But I'm going to spend $3,000 or $4,000 just for a repurposed hybrid battery. And so, you know, that's a big hit into someone's budget when they weren't planning on having that kind of infusion of capital need come into their life at that point.
Just a couple of minutes left with Sam Collier. Sam, we've been friends for a long time, and you know, always share ideas with me about how to make things better. And this whole trip was really my effort to share a whole bunch of ideas with a group to make things better back home. As you head back, what are you kind of taking back from this trip that you want to do?
Well, I would love for us to do, as a follow-up to this trip, get all these great brains that have been on this trip and others who are needed for this, and have a big kind of a strategic planning dreaming session where we said, where is the puck going? What do we need to do to get there? And let's all figure out what our piece is. There's going to be a technological piece. There's clearly a lot of electrical infrastructure piece. There's people here writing code for all the controllers. And so all of those folks. And then there's a policy piece. What is the policy piece? How can we come together in a divided nation and come together around our common need to stabilize our climate with policies that get us to where the puck is absolutely going, and so that someone doesn't say, how come you people who are in the vanguard, how come you didn't see this 5 and 10 years ago? We have all these cars and nowhere to charge them. So we've got to, almost like a wartime footing. You know, after Pearl Harbor, the U.S. got together, and next thing you know, they're rolling out bombers and battleships at a rate that we've never seen before. We need to have that wartime footing. We need to have that grand plan with all the people that can make it happen.
Well, thanks so much for being on the trip, for being on Energy Matters, for being a friend. Really appreciate you being here.
It's my pleasure, Tim. Thank you for your leadership in so many ways.
Tim Eccles, wrapping up here at the Getty Museum, wrapping up our California trip with all these takeaways. If you're interested in finding out more, go to my Twitter feed at Matters Radio. You can always hit me up, tim@timeccles.com. I'd love to hear what you think. Thanks a lot for listening today. I hope you have a great weekend. You've been listening to Energy Matters.
Logan Booker here, producer of Energy Matters, and I want to tell you about the Advanced Power Alliance. For more than 20 years now, the Advanced Power Alliance has been leading the energy transition in America's traditional energy states. They advocate for wind energy, solar power, and energy storage, all while partnering with traditional resources to ensure that America has abundant, affordable, cleaner energy to power our homes, our lives, as well as our economy. With the growth of solar and advanced storage and power generation technologies, every state now has the opportunity to be a leading energy state. Advanced Power Alliance is proud to partner with the Georgia Large Scale Solar Association and work with the Public Service Commission, Georgia Power, and their customers as Georgia continues to be one of America's leading renewable energy states. You can learn more about the Advanced Power Alliance at poweralliance.org. That's poweralliance.org.
Having a family member or close friend in crisis is something we have all experienced. North Point Christian Counseling can help. Whether it's marriage counseling or a loved one struggling with abuse or addiction, North Point Christian Counseling has counselors in Macon, Athens, Kennesaw, and Albany to help bring healing and recovery. To find out more, call 478-973-9358 or find them online at northpointcounseling.org. That's 478-973-9358 or northpointcounseling.org.